Blog Talk Radio.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the FDH Lounge. This is mini episode number 483 of the program. You have with us today your favorite change of plans football talkers, Rick Morris and Kyle Ross. Because I know we said last week on the show we'd be doing this in person, and you can tell from the format here, from hearing us, that this is a phoner. But hey, sometimes life intervenes, and as you said, Kyle, we're going to have a little bit clearer sense of what's going on next week anyways. It'll be post-Denver, New England. It'll be post-Houston, Philadelphia. A little bit more of a shakeout, so maybe it's a blessing in disguise.
I'll tell you, Chris Berman never has car problems. I'll tell you that much.
I'm sure Chris Berman also drives a fine BMW, though. So
yeah, I don't think his something tells me his car's not rumbling, bumbling, and stumbling into that Bristol parking lot. I'll tell you that much right there. Hey now. So I suppose we should also tell our fine listeners that the mid-season show has been delayed till next week. But like you said, while life intervened and caused that, I really can't be happier, because a lot of the games you mentioned could make us sound a lot dumber if the results don't go the way I think this week. So I'm kind of happy. And plus, we can always go with this. At this time next week, every team will have played at least 8 games. So we can at least use a mid-season record to project a full season record. So that's our news story, and we're sticking to it at least for the next 6 days.
I choose to regard that as the true mid-season point, Kyle Ross. Thank you for putting that out there. What our records were to this point here, I went 7-8 last week. That was a late rally because I was getting clobbered in the 1 o'clock. So that was after a 2-0 start. I proceeded to then get annihilated and then rally again late. 7-8, 2-1 on my big three, 1-0 on my lock, which, of course, I agreed with you on last week, that being New Orleans on Sunday night. Record for the year, 59-61-1. 12-12 on the big three, 4-4 on my locks. As I said, though, if you were with me through the first 5 weeks and jumped off when I said it was the high water point, I am 79-55-1 with play against for the last 3 weeks, play ons for the first five. I'm going to keep riding that into the ground, Kyle, because that's going to be profitable all the way through as I keep losing. You, Kyle, with a rare red week here at 1-2. But you are still comfortably in the black for the season at 20-14.
Yeah, I got hosed again late, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But what can you do? Whenever I lose that third, whenever I give up 3 plays, I try to be cute, and I lose the Thursday game, I always have a bad feeling going into Sunday. Although, as you pointed out, New Orleans was a nice winner for both of us. I do believe I referred to that last week as my arguably favorite play of the year, and they responded in kind. In time. That was,
absolutely.
That was good. Yeah, that was good. I'll tell you what, though. You talked about those 1 o'clock games last week. Man, I think I texted you about 4:30 last Sunday saying, I think I got every single one of those games wrong.
Well, yeah, it was a tough 1 o'clock session, no question about it. Us doing good Sunday night, it's funny, I mentioned that to FDH Director of Research and recent house guest, Nate Noy. Boy, there are books that could be written about that experience. But Nate kind of cocked his eyebrows at our whole sense of sureness on them Sunday night. But as he said, you know, never go against you and Kyle, and he's absolutely right. We were in agreement on that one. And it's interesting, too. New Orleans is going to be one of my 3 plays. I won't tip my hand on that, but longtime listeners certainly probably have a sense of which way I would go on that. So we'll actually be skipping the first game to talk about. We won't be starting with the Thursday game as per usual. By the way, teams on the bye week this week, it's Atlanta, Buffalo, Chicago, Detroit, Green Bay, and Tennessee. So none of them will be lining up this weekend. So if we're skipping past New Orleans and Carolina, that we then start with Philadelphia and Houston. And that is a 1 o'clock game at the NRG Stadium in Houston on Fox. Kenny Albert, 5-time lounge guest, along with Daryl Moose Johnston and Tony Siragusa, on the call for that one. Philadelphia is laying 2 on the road here. 2.5 was the opening line. So it's a really interesting thing here, Kyle, when you look at how these teams are shaking out, when you look at what's been the kind of up and downs with them. Philadelphia is starting to somewhat kind of come back to earth after that improbably hot start that they had. To a certain extent, the same is true with Houston. I just keep coming back to the notion. I was on them a week ago against Tennessee because I just said in a general sense, they tend to beat who they should and lose to who they shouldn't beat. And I'm going to go with that again. I don't see them as being better than Philadelphia. Hence, I'll take Philadelphia on the road. Basically, it's all about Houston being the foil for the Eagles rather than anything I have to say plus or minus for them. I'll say Eagles get the bounce back W on the road.
This is probably the hardest call of the week for me. And not surprisingly, it's a game that I will not make a call at all. It's one of those games that, although it's a non-conference matchup, I think it's got strong playoff implications in that the loser is going to be in trouble in what, for both conferences, is going to be a very crowded wild card picture. So I knew you were going to go back. If you didn't, I was going to rehash what you said last week about Houston, about them, you know, generally beating the teams they should and then losing to the teams that you think they might. To that point, Mr. Rick Morris, they are 4-0 straight up this year when favored. They are 0-4 straight up as an underdog. So
look at you.
You are not imagining what your opinion of the Houston Texans is not being imagined out of thin air. So I'm passing, but look, I think I can't disagree with the lines you're talking about with Philadelphia you know, probably being the better team. The only thing is, if you recall, and I know you were on board as well, I did not have the Eagles as a playoff team this year. Mm-hmm. And if that rings true, this is what's keeping me off the game. And if that rings true, this is the kind of game they would stand to lose if they're not going to make the playoffs. That's something to keep in mind.
That's true. That's a very, very good point. And I thought about that as well. How do these teams shape up coming out of this game? You and I actually picked Houston to win the division, which is looking perhaps as dumb as it looked a week ago. So, yeah, this a win here certainly keeps Houston more viable, no question.
Sure. I'll say this one more thing, too. If you do like Philadelphia, you can get them only laying a point at 5 dimes. So you have to lay a little extra, about 10 cents extra juice, but as always, trying to help everyone involved. So if you do like the Eagles, 5 dimes would be the place to bet right now because you we're laying a point less than everywhere else. I'm looking right now, it's 2, I believe, everywhere else. I see 1, 2.5 still. They almost assuredly will kick off as the favorite in this game.
You are, as always, the smart consumer, Kyle Ross. No question about that. We turn our attention down at the diagonal opposite end of the state from where we are situated here in the greater Cleveland area to Paul Brown Stadium down in the Natty. 1 o'clock Eastern time on CBS, Spiro Dedis and Solomon Wilcots will have the call, unsurprisingly.
Your favorite.
As the 1-7 Jags take on the 4-2-1 Bengals, if ever there were a team not as good as their record, it would be the Bungles right about now. No doubt about that one. And the line, though, does not reflect that. Cincinnati is laying 11, albeit that is down from 13.5 at the open. And looking at the team over the last couple weeks here, unfortunately, my Cleveland Browns were the team to furnish Jacksonville's only win of the season. That was also the breakthrough game for Denard Robinson in the backfield, who has been going great guns there. The nice thing, at least for me personally, is that I was able to pick him up in both of my fantasy leagues after the breakout.
Oh, I got him, too. I got him, too.
Yes.
Didn't even play him last week. I didn't play him or Ben Roethlisberger last week, and I still won by 50 points. How's that for a fantasy?
Nice. That's the kind of depth that you want. But for Denard Robinson, I keep coming back to this. You've laughed in recent weeks about how I seem to go disproportionately towards the rushing yardage number. But for the Bengals, 140.7 yards per game given up on the ground. With a hot Denard Robinson for Jacksonville, I like their chances of at least keeping it close. Cincinnati's not a very good football team right now. I don't think Jacksonville will do them outright like they did my Browns, but I won't rule it out, and I certainly think they'll cover the 11.
Wow, I like where your head's at here. I like where your head's at. By the way, with all the rushing statistics, sometimes it feels like I'm doing a podcast with Mike Ditka, by the way. I don't know about that. But so, first recommendation of the week, and you can guess who it is, sports fan, it's Jacksonville. To your point about Cincinnati, Rick Morris, your second good point that you've made so far here in the program. The Cincinnati Bengals, 4-2-1 currently right now. They lead the AFC North. I mean, get the toilet paper out of my mouth. Yet they have a point differential of -3. So I would agree with you. They are indeed overachieving their record. I think that when all's said and done, they're going to feel pretty fortunate to have swept the Ravens. I know that people get mad. There's a certain segment of football fans that get mad when you say something like this. But even though the Bengals swept the Ravens, I still think the Ravens are a better team. And
yeah.
Cincinnati is a team that, well, look, they're great at home. We know that. They still have not lost a home regular season game in the last two seasons, of course. Doesn't really mean a lot when you get punked by San Diego in the playoffs, but that's a different podcast for a different day. I just don't think they're built to cover this spread. I'm all over the Jaguars. Whenever you have an underdog that was blown out the previous week, and then a favorite off a big division win, you know, I just think this is a letdown spot. Too many points. You know my attraction to double-digit dogs anyway. Jags, first of five recommendations this week.
Okay. Well, next up we have a deja vu game. It's a bad team from the state of Florida at the Cleveland Browns. This time it's Tampa Bay. Unlike the aforementioned Jaguars a couple weeks ago, Tampa Bay at 1-6 versus the Browns 4-3. 1 o'clock Eastern time from First Energy Charges Too Much for Their Electricity Stadium in Cleveland. This is a Fox game with Tom Brenneman, David Beal, and the lovely Tandalora Oakman on the call. And it is a rough spot for the Browns. Their running game has not been nearly the same since Alex Mack went down, and that has had a tremendous destabilizing effect on the offense. Of course, that happened during the Jacksonville game, losing their all-pro center. They failed to crack 2 yards a carry last week against Oakland, of all teams. A very fortunate win. The Browns are laying 6.5 in this one, up from 6. I said it last week, and I was wrong about the Browns not covering, but I said, don't just assume because they're at home. Everyone's going with the home-road splits with the Browns, different team at home. Right about now, before and after Alex Mack is more important than home or road. And post-Alex Mack, this is not a very good team, especially offensively at this point. The offense the last couple weeks has been more what we thought it was going to be. I like Tampa Bay to cover in this one, the 6.5. And again, they may win outright. They may be the second bad team from the state of Florida to win in Cleveland this year. A team that should be 6-2 would then be 4-4. That's pretty horrific, but it's within reach for the Browns, sadly enough.
Well, you know, not to, you know, try to prop the Browns up anymore. They did lose in Jacksonville. Keep in mind, not that loss.
Okay, you know what? Yeah, my bad. That was in Jacksonville. Yes, my bad.
Well, it was a bad loss. Make no mistake about it.
You can tell how much it traumatized me.
Yeah. This line confuses me a little bit, Ricky, and I know you kind of feel the same. The Browns were a very fortunate cover last week. I think we can all agree that it was not the most deserved ATS win of the season by the Orange and Brown. You talk about the offense, and there's no denying that losing Alex Mack is big time, and that hurts. But how much of the Browns' regression the last 2 weeks on offense may have something to do with the fact that defenses have figured out Brian Hoyer? I think that's the real worrisome sign.
Yes.
As you're a Cleveland Browns fan, because he has not looked great against two bad teams that have bad defenses. Now, Jacksonville's defense, Jacksonville and Oakland, because their defense winds up being out there a lot, I think a lot of their numbers do get inflated, particularly the rushing yards allowed on both sides, because teams are just running the ball at the end against them. But he has not looked very good at all. To me, this was almost a borderline why ask why, to borrow one of your expressions.
Okay.
In that, who thinks Cleveland is worth laying points with? That's at least the way I feel. Then I take a look at the betting handle here, and apparently a lot of people are still on them. 70% of the wagers on this game are on Cleveland. It was interesting. I actually liked the Browns coming off the loss more last week, in the sense that I think too many, you know me, the only underdog I don't like is the underdog that the public likes. Whenever the, you know, whenever the public jumps on an underdog, that's ironically when I jump off. And it seems like there were a lot of money line wagers on the Raiders last week. You know, people, oh, you know, if the Jaguars can do it, the Raiders can too. I thought that was foolishness. Now, the Browns made it interesting for three quarters, no doubt. I'd kind of be inclined to go with you here. I'm not going to recommend it, but, you know, Tampa Bay, who, sadly, I watched the fourth quarter of that game last week, is a very frustrating team. I don't know if it's the coaching. You know, you hate to talk in platitudes, but who's the locker room leader there? I think that may be an issue as well. I mean, they've got some talented pieces, but, you know, I mean, who's the go-to leader in that locker room? But they're still not as bad as their record, is my point with Tampa Bay.
Right.
And they may be due to steal one here. So I'd be inclined to agree with you, but I'm not going to recommend it.
Okay. I could see that. I would say, too, you know, you talk about in terms of the quarterbacks, again, I actually have marginally more confidence in Mike Glennon than I do Brian Hoyer at this point. And that's more of a slam on Hoyer than it is on Glennon. Because, again, Brian Hoyer was fortunate to have a great running game there, you know, being able to go 1-2-3 deep, which is hilarious because they could go 1-10 a year ago and not get anybody doing anything after they traded Trent Richardson. But once Alex Mack went down again, it's the before and the after. I keep coming back to that. That entire offensive line is destabilized, and it's taking away the advantages that were propping up Brian Hoyer. So I somewhat concur with your thoughts on him. I think some of it's he's not getting propped up like he was.
I'll say this: I think they're tied together. I mean, I think you and I are both making the same point in that.
Yeah.
Jacksonville and Oakland both stacked the box and dared Brian Hoyer to beat them, and he struggled to do that, which is very troubling moving forward. And also, we should also cut him some slack in that he did lose Jordan Cameron halfway through the game, and this is an offense already without Josh Gordon. I mean, there's not a lot of receiving options, so, you know, we should cut him some slack in that regard.
I think that part of it is true. Up next, it's the 1-7 Jets at the 4-3 Chiefs, a revival of an old AFL rivalry. 1 o'clock Eastern time from Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City. Greg Gumbel, Trent Green, and Evan Washburn coming from what might be one of the happiest places on earth, depending on the outcome of Game 7 of the World Series, which you can tell is still in the balance for when we are recording this. Kansas City is laying 9.5 in this one, up from 7.5 at the Open. And the only thing I got for this one, it's something that brought me a winner last week, and that was in the Breakfast at Wembley game with Atlanta, where I said, I got nothing. I got no reason whatsoever to believe in Atlanta. And I just know that the NFL is not as obvious as this. Kansas City, based on the way that they've been looking recently, the Jets, based on the way they've been looking recently, I should be all over Kansas City. It's not a why ask why in that I think that the line is bad. I think the line is appropriate for where they are. And that's with me not being as big of a believer as Kansas City. Again, I think they're going to be a little bit better than I predicted at the beginning of the year, and we'll talk about that in the mid-year reviews, but they're not as good as they looked against St. Louis, but they're still way better than the Jets. I can't make any case for the Jets, so that's why I think they're going to sneak under the 9.5, because it just seems too obvious to go on Kansas City. Everything to me is pointing towards Kansas City, and anytime it's that obvious, you should go the other way.
Like where your head's at here. You can get 10.5 and 5 dimes on the Jets, and I am going to do it. Second recommendation of the week. Like you,
okay.
I got no justification for the Jets. If you watch them, they stink. Do you know what's frightening about the Jets?
What?
Is that I picked them to only win 4 games this year in what I termed a worst-case scenario. They're going to be worse than what I thought was the worst-case scenario.
Yes, true.
They lost by 20 at home to Buffalo after Buffalo lost both of its starting running backs. They have no quarterback. You know, unless if they're competitive in one of the next few games, by the way, this is the team I'm taking, ladies and gentlemen, this week. Rex Ryan may not survive the bye week. I mean, this team looks horrid. But then again, like you said, the NFL's not that easy, and I'm not that big of a fan of Kansas City. You know, the city, by the way, you talk about a letdown. The city will either be celebrating a World Series championship or be very mad that they did not win one. How that affects
right.
the football team, I don't know. But, again, I'm desperate for justifications to take this number. So there you have it.
Well, either way, we know that everyone will be drunk from the tailgating, whether it's either working over the victory hangover or the pissed-off defeat hangover. So one way or another, there will be beer flowing, suds flowing in the shared parking lots between Kauffman Stadium and Arrowhead this Sunday. Next up is a game that, hey, we all knew this was going to be the game of the year to this point of the season ahead of time. Didn't we? It's the 6-1 Cardinals at the 6-2 Cowboys, 1 o'clock Eastern time, AT&T Stadium in Arlington on Fox. The A team of Buck Aikman and Andrews are back on the game for Fox. And the opening line was Dallas laying 4. And I know you said that the line is not really much in evidence at various places, but I'm just going to call it 4 for the purposes of taking this one. This is one of the ones that, again, to me was a little bit more difficult. I've been kind of going back and forth on this. There's two things that I look at, one of which, yes, it is going to be rushing yards against. Cardinals 77.9 yards per game. Of course, for Dallas, with MVP candidate DeMarco Murray, so much of it's been predicated on him being able to get it going. So it's strength on strength there. It's also strength on strength in the passing game. Patrick Peterson v. Dez Bryant. The last time, to me, that we saw offense and defense strength on strength like this, and again, I'm just talking targeted strength on strength. I'm not comparing Arizona to what Seattle was at the end of last year. I'm not saying that. Arizona is actually underachieved defensively en route to going 6-1, which makes it all the more remarkable. But the rushing game defense is amazing right now. Patrick Peterson is amazing. The Super Bowl taught me go with the defense in these kind of climactic battles here. I'll take Arizona getting the fictional 4 points wherever you can get that line in Dallas.
With the Cowboys quarterback situation, I'm just going to lay off. I have given up trying to figure out the Arizona Cardinals. I do not understand this football team at all. I do not understand how they're 6-1. This is a team that has started Drew Stanton and Logan Thomas at times this year. I shouldn't say Logan Thomas started, but he did play against Denver, and they lost that game, oh, by the way. They really haven't been impressive on either side of the ball. On offense, they've been extremely, I don't want to say fortunate, but productive in third down situations that they shouldn't be as productive in, if that makes sense. You can't, contrary to what people believe, you just can't coach somebody up to be better when it matters most. Okay, that doesn't exist. But Arizona just seems to make big plays when it does count. I mean, this is a defense, by the way, that at various points of the season has missed 7 contributors from last year.
Yep.
They're 6-1 in a division that has Seattle and San Francisco. I don't understand it. I don't like it. And this is going to be the one of my top five future wagers that I gave away at the beginning of the year that I lose. The other 4 I'm feeling pretty good about. The Jets looks to be a lock under the win total. The Bills only need to win 2 more games, and that's cash. And I'm still feeling pretty good about both Kansas City and Carolina finishing under their respective numbers. I'm going to lose this one, but yeah, Ricky, I know that you scratch your head when I say this. I am not ready to anoint Arizona a playoff team yet, despite the record. If they win here, I'll change my tune. And that brings me to my point. I don't want to handicap this game, although there are certainly lots of great points. Again, I want to add a stipulation to it. Let's say Tony Romo plays in this game. Let's say Tony Romo plays in this game. The great Tony Romo, that is, to you. Let's make a deal. If Dallas wins, you have to say something nice about the Cowboys next week, specifically Romo.
Okay.
If Arizona wins, I will sing the virtues of the Redbirds. How about that?
Okay, we'll do that.
Well,
anything,
how about that?
Make it and keep it interesting. I'm good with that.
Okay, and then one thing that would make me very worried if I was a Cowboys fan, regardless who's quarterback. They did not seem to handle the blitz well Monday night. No one blitzes more on defense than Arizona. That could be a major problem. Major problem in this game. Dallas is, by the way, the opposite of Houston. It seems they only win when they're a dog, and they lose when they're favored. So something weird in the water in Texas, I think, there.
Exactly. Cards will be blitzing as soon as they get off the plane. Next up here, it's the 3-5 Redskins at the 3-5 Vikings. It will be a matter of vengeance for the city of Washington, D.C., having lost the Washington Senators baseball team to Minnesota in 1961. They'll be out to get vengeance for that one. Chris Myers, Ronnie Garber, Jennifer Hale. Yes, on the call for Fox, TCF Bank Stadium in Minneapolis. At this point, I like to just see how ridiculous I can get with some of these vengeance scenarios. I'll be honest with you, but you probably figured that out already. Minnesota in this one, laying 2.5. It had been 1.5 the other way, so we've seen a little bit of a swing to this point in time. This is one of the ones that I really, really struggled with the most. And again, I know that you, Kyle Ross, are disdainful of the term momentum in these scenarios, but it seems to me Washington's got a little bit more momentum than does Minnesota. It's a short week, but it's a very impressive win that they had on Monday night. They've been looking much better under Jay Gruden in the last two games. They'll be back to 4-5 and still at the fringes of contention if they can pull this one off. Here's what I like. They've managed to win three games to this point into the season without Alfred Morris getting 100 yards in any of the games. By the way, where I get a lot of my nuggets again, I'll give them the free plug, USA Today Sports Weekly. That's where I get a lot of my things, you know, rushing yardage against, et cetera. But that was the one thing that jumped out at me. Alfred Morris is due to get at least 100 yards. If he can do that, you got to figure the Redskins are going to win the game. I think he gets it here. I think Washington gets it here. I like 2.5. Give me the road dog in this play.
Not everyone's got this up. Who knows what's going on with the Washington quarterback situation? The last I heard is that unless if RG3 is 100%, they're going with Colt McCoy again. He looked okay. I thought he looked okay Monday night, but he didn't look awesome. I'll be honest there. I mean, although I do love his promos that he's cutting these days, Ricky Colt McCoy, the "aw shucks, I'm just glad to be playing in this league anymore" promos. Those are really good. Those really touch the heart. You know, I mean, I really enjoyed those. Of course, he will not give them he will not give them today of the Hispanic speaking stations, but that's a different story for a different day. I'm not playing. You know, with the line not fully posted in the QB situation, I'm obviously going to abstain here. I'll say that these teams are pretty even. I mean, you talk about one win in Washington contention. Well, you could say the same about Minnesota. They're 3-5 too. They have a young quarterback who's trying to find his way. Neither offense has been awesome. Minnesota has had the two big games at St. Louis. They've put up 34, and then they put up 41 on Atlanta. Other than that, 8, 7, 9, 10, 3, 16 and 19 points. Washington had 41. They had 41 against Jacksonville. You know, when everyone thought Kirk Cousins was something special. Other than that, and then they had 34 the following week against Philadelphia. Other than that, 6. And then the last 5 weeks, 14, 17, 20, 19, and 20. This promises probably to be a pretty low-scoring game. But, you know, that said, it'll probably wind up being the shootout of the week. But, I'm staying away. I'm staying away in between two evenly matched teams that I think are, you know, thinking about next year pretty soon.
Probably a good thought. All right, 7 games to go in our window yet here. Next up, it is the 2-5 Rams at the 4-3 49ers, 405 Stadium in Santa Clara on Fox. Burkhart, Lynch, and the delicious Pam Oliver on the call for Fox. San Francisco is laying 10 in this one, up from 7.5. I know that you are averse to laying this many points generally, Kyle, but I like the 49ers in this scenario. Kaepernick lit it up against St. Louis a couple of weeks ago. I think he's going to be able to do it again. I think he's got their number. I like San Francisco coming out raring to go after that big embarrassment that they suffered. I feel sorry for the Rams. They're going to suffer here.
Yeah, as you know, that I'm usually inclined to take the double-digit dog, but this is the one I'm passing on this week. 49ers off, and they're off a bye, too, we should point out. They've had an extra week to stew over what happened against Denver.
Yep.
You just get the feeling that the Rams kind of had their shot to upset San Francisco on Monday night a couple weeks ago. I mean, these teams just played.
Right.
And they blew it, so You know, what are the? I know they've played San Francisco tough in the past, but you kind of get the feeling maybe last time was their one shot to pull the upset. Don't certainly do not see them winning the game straight up. And to be honest, I might even be surprised if they cover.
Yeah, I agree with that. Certainly, next up, one of the big games of the year. NBC's got to be PO. They didn't get this one for Sunday Night Football. The 6-1 Broncos at the 6-2 Patriots. 4:25 Eastern Time, Gillette Stadium in Foxborough on CBS. Of course, it's their A team of Nance, Sims, and Wolfson on this one. Yet another Brady Manning matchup. We always wonder when it's going to be the last one. In all likelihood, they'll meet again in the playoffs. But you never know. There's always the chance it's the last one. Denver's laying 3 on the road, down from 4 initially. I'm just going to go to this, my stubbornness of New England was my preseason pick to go to the Super Bowl and represent the AFC, predicated in large part on the fact that they were hosting this game and would have the tiebreaker. Denver pretty much locks up home field through the AFC for all intents and purposes if they win this game. New England has to have this in order to even have a shot. I'm stubborn. I'm not going to back off in New England. I'm going to take them with the 3 points on Sunday.
I think a lot of people are going to join with you. I remember, what was it, about a month ago, I talked about New England's history as a home dog under Belichick when they played Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
That was the start of this great run they've been on. But I want to talk about something else with you this week.
Okay.
What does it say that Denver is a 3-point favorite on the road against what is likely the second-best team in the AFC? And they deserve to be. They are just head and shoulders above every other team. I mean, every time there is nothing that Emmanuel Sanders isn't better at than Eric Decker was. What an upgrade that was. And the defense is so much better than it was last year. Normally, I'd be all over New England as a home dog. I'm staying away. Denver is just that much better than everyone else right now in the league. They're better than last year. They are better than last year, man. I don't care if Manning's numbers aren't as good. They are a much better team than they were last year. Spoiler alert, I may be changing my preseason Super Bowl pick next week.
Okay, well, we shall see on that. I do know that Jimmy the Greek agrees with you on certain attributes that Emmanuel Sanders has that Eric Decker does not, but that's another story.
Oh, now come on! That's completely uncalled for!
And completely in character.
No, remember when Jason, by the way, remember when Jason Jones' buddy got all mad at me because I said that white Wes Welker and white Eric Decker would have no chance against the Seattle secondary. Remember that?
And you were right about that. FDH senior editor Jason Jones learning that along with his friends in Denver the hard way. Up next, the team that did Denver in the Super Bowl, the 4-3 Seahawks, are hosting arguably the worst team in the league, the 0-7 Raiders. 4:25 Eastern Time, CenturyLink Field in Seattle on CBS. Harlan and Gannon are on the call. And if there wasn't enough motivation for the Seahawks to be able to turn their season around here, you've got the additional thing. The city of Seattle, of course, losing out on the American League wildcard spot to Oakland just a couple weeks back. So they're going to want to get their revenge for the Mariners, you got to think, in that spot here, too. The Mariners on the outside looking in. In all seriousness, again, and I know I keep saying this, that Seattle is going to keep opening up a can of whoop-ass on somebody. They didn't thump Carolina like I thought, but they did come through and win that game last week. This is, I think, where it gets ugly. CenturyLink Field, Seattle's laying 15, down from 16 initially. I know you say never take a team laying this many points. It's not a recommended pick, but it's
don't do it.
Seattle minus 15.
Got 5 recommendations this week. So far, the previous two are real ugly. Jets and Jags taking double digits. Let's make it 3 for 3, and they're all ugly. Give me the... I have no justification for that pick, by the way. I don't know. Hold your nose and do something else. Watch a different game. Hope 3 hours later the Raiders are within 2 touchdowns. There you go. It's too many points.
Kyle, that's your ugliest pick of the year, and you've made some ugly ones. That is that's a balls of steel pick right there. I salute that. If nothing else, the game that NBC gets for their Sunday night matchup, not a bad consolation prize. Probably the 5-3 Ravens at the 5-3 Squealers. 8 o'clock Eastern time from Heinz Field in Pittsburgh on NBC, Michael Stafoya and Collinsworth on the call. And this is one where it's been going back and forth. Baltimore was laying a point and a half on the road earlier in the week. Then it went to a pick. Now I think it's back to Baltimore minus one. I went different ways on this one. This is another one of the ones that's very, very hard for me to pick. But what I'm going to isolate on this one, it's not rushing defense here. Here's what I am going to look at. And I find this surprising because most people would tell you right now that the Baltimore defense on balance has been better than the Pittsburgh one. Third down conversion percentage. Ravens allowing the other team to convert 42.6% of the time on third downs. Pittsburgh allowing the other team to convert just 36.6% of the time on third downs. I think that's going to be a difference. They're at home. I think Baltimore is the better team, but in this spot, Pittsburgh's out for revenge from earlier on from getting thumped. Give me the Steelers getting the one.
I'm going to surprise you here. I'm going the other way, and it's a recommendation. I'm on the Ravens here.
You and
this
those
line,
with Kyle Ross.
You know, to me, this is a pick 'em, but I see you working. I mean, technically, it is a road favorite. But look, I mean, the Ravens had revenge last week against the Bengals. That didn't work, and everyone liked them. I just think that this is the way the NFL works. Everyone thinks the Steelers are great now after, you know, 3 weeks ago, everyone was writing them off, saying Mike Tomlin should be fired. Ben Roethlisberger,
right,
make absolutely no ifs, ands, or buts about it, played the best game of his career last week. I think it's hard to duplicate. We'll talk about the Colts in a minute, so I won't go too much into that game. But I just think this line is telling. It's almost always three in favor of the home team when these teams meet. This is a definitive statement by the odds makers that they now think the Baltimore Ravens are better, and I agree. We'll talk more about that next week when we talk about the AFC North moving forward. Give me Baltimore, my fourth recommendation of the week.
Okay. All right. We're going opposite ways, and you're taking the road favorite, albeit a short one. Never say never in this world, certainly. But the Monday night game, that is the first of my three recommend plays. Actually, and this should make me a little bit nervous, two of my three recommended plays are in prime time this week, the more scrutinized games. That should make me nervous. It is the 5-3 Colts at the 3-4 Giants, 8:30 Eastern time, MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford on ESPN Monday night. Mike Tirico, John Gruden, Lisa Salters on the call. The Colts are laying a pretty solid 3 points on the road in this game. It goes to show you that, again, there were very, very few games that jumped out at me this week because it makes me nervous picking the Giants. I've gotten burned on them and against them a lot in the last season and a half. One of the most unpredictable teams in the league, no question about it. Having said that, I'm going against them. I think it's a bounce-back spot for Indianapolis. The funny thing is, a week ago, you were much higher on Indianapolis than I was. Not that I was down on them, but I wasn't buying, OMG, could win the Super Bowl. You know, I just wasn't there yet, and I'm still not there now. But I think they're going to come out raring to go on Monday night, and I don't think the Giants are going to be able to stop them. I like Indianapolis laying the three in this spot.
Like you, I am confounded by the New York Giants. They are a team that probably will Jekyll and Hyde their way to 8-8, which is kind of what we thought before the year. As for the Colts, it's funny. You know, we tape the show on Wednesday, and there's obviously a few days to think between games. I sort of came off, you know, it's funny. Whenever I do kind of endorse a road favorite, it's always kind of the wrong time to do it, it seems, you know, on the show. You know, I kind of came off the Colts a little bit last week, just going to see how lopsided the betting was by the end of the week. I mean, almost everyone was on the Colts. That was a huge win for the sports books on the Steelers, in case if you folks haven't read about that yet. Here's, to me, other than Philadelphia, Houston, this is the hardest call of the week. I'm shocked that this, you know, you feel so strongly one way or the other on this game. The number does feel pretty solid. I'm staying away. You know, it's funny that the Colts, for as much as everyone's hyping them, a loss here on the road, which I don't think is out of the question, would have them at 5-4 and, you know, potentially in a tie with Houston, which is kind of how you and I saw that race going before the year. So
yeah,
we shall see. This is another game that makes me feel very good about the fact we're doing the midseason show next week and not this week.
Yeah, we'll have this one under our belts and be able to evaluate. I don't know that we need to see much more of the Giants to know anything because they're going to be up or down the whole way. We need to learn a little bit more about Indianapolis, and we will be able to benefit from that. Another explosive dome team playing on the road. Actually, I'm not liking this trend as I'm talking about this here.
Here we go. Road favorite Ricky is on fire again.
Yes, I am. It's the 3-4 Saints at the 3-4-1 Panthers. Nance Sims and Wolfson on the call. NFL Network only. For those of us that don't have that, we will not be watching any CBS simulcasts from here on in. 8:25 Eastern Time from Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte. And again, this is one where New Orleans is laying 3 points. It had been
it's up to 3 now. Yeah. It started at +2.5. This is your biggest line move of the week. Oh boy.
It is. And the thing of it is, though, again, though, you and I, part of it, here's the thing, though, all right? If it was at that point, it's because people were slower to pick up than you and I were. I'll put us over. That New Orleans was primed and going to be ready to do it Sunday night and start to turn it around a little bit here. So people were a little bit behind the curve on on New Orleans, not you and I. So that's part of the reason for the overreaction. When other people didn't see it coming and start betting accordingly, Carolina is just a big, big fraud. I talked about it before with Cincinnati, the team that they tied, and it's kind of fitting because neither one of them is nearly as good as their record. And 3-4-1 is fairly mediocre. Okay, but the Panthers won those two games early on and have been dog crap ever since. I understand it seems too obvious, and I know last week I said to you I was nervous on one of your plays because it seemed too obvious, and those are the ones that do bite you, but I like New Orleans to keep it going. They have just the momentum, and Carolina has negative momentum. I like New Orleans laying the 3 Thursday night.
How soon we forget. Week 1, this exact same situation played out. I went against the New Orleans Saints. They were in Atlanta. They lost that game. But as much as I'd love to back Carolina, I cannot. I don't think they're very good. The Saints, I don't think there's ever been a 3-4 team in NFL history that I'm more confident is going to win this division than them. And even if they lose this game, I still am confident that they're going to win the division.
Right.
I hate that line move with a change in favorite. No, thank you.
Exactly. All right, last game of the week here. My 1,000-star gold-plated lock of the millennium for NFL Week 9.
Oh, we agree again!
At the 4-3 Dolphins, we do for the second week in a row. My lock coincides with one of yours. Cast Lounge guest Ian Eagle on the call with Dan Fouts and Jenny Dell. CBS, 1 o'clock Eastern Time from Sun Life Stadium in Miami. Talking to you off air, you said it the best. You said it better than I could. The better team in this spot getting points. Miami is laying 1.5. It was +1 for Miami at the open, but... again, I realize I've underestimated my Dolphins, my 1A team, a couple different points in time during the season. Maybe I am again, but this just smells like where San Diego gets off the schneid. I know it's that they're going to the East Coast, blah, 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 blah. I don't care. Give me the road dog in this one. It's the better team getting 1.5. That's San Diego.
There's a lot of indicators that say I shouldn't be doing this. They are a West Coast team playing an early start time. They're the most popular side right now as of Wednesday's current wagering. But God bless it, Rick Morris. They are the better team. I am not a buyer in Miami. I'm a buyer in San Diego. Fifth recommended play this week. I'm with you. Chargers. Go, Chargers, go. They get the check.
All right. So your plays for this week. Jacksonville, the Jets, the Chargers. Hey, what's a good team doing in there? Oakland and Baltimore. My three plays for the week, my three recommended, New Orleans, Indianapolis, and my lock pick being San Diego. So I'm with you on that one. Looking forward to another good week here, Kyle Ross, and then breaking it down with you in person next week, getting to the midseason stuff as well. It is going to be a November football-a-palooza.
Can't wait.
That's Bart Scott voice. Can't wait. Yeah. Can't wait. We'll catch you next week, people. Thanks for joining us in the FDH Lounge.